Welcome to All Analytics Radio. This is Jessica Davis, and I am a senior editor at All Analytics and UBM Tech. And I want to welcome you to the show today. 2016 has certainly been an unpredictable year, in spite of so many efforts to predict it. The biggest example, or at least one of the biggest, is the U.S. presidential election. A year ago, no one knew who would win the Republican primary, let alone the general election. And the iconic statistician and predictor of elections, Nate Silver, who runs the 538 website, was speaking at an event I attended about 13 months ago. And at that event, he noted that it's gotten harder to predict elections because polling has become less accurate, and there's no one single place where everyone goes to get their news or facts. He said back then that relying on media or coverage of polls wasn't the best way to get an accurate read of who might win the election because much of the media is swayed by their own particular political slant, and people don't get their news from the same sources anymore. But apparently that message of uncertainty somehow got lost in the rush to figure out ahead of time who would win the election ahead of the actual vote, because most everyone was predicting that Hillary Clinton was a sure thing and that Donald Trump would lose. A week ahead of the election, however, Silver wrote on 538 that Clinton's margin of victory in a handful of swing states was within the margin of error of the polls. He still had her as a favorite, but was much more conservative about it than other sites that were predicting a huge Clinton victory. And we all know what happened next. Donald Trump pulled out the victory and is now the U.S. president-elect. So what went wrong with the polling and with the data? How did the polling process fail to predict Trump's victory? And does the failure of the data collection, polling, and modeling process undermine the trust that we put in data analytics and predictions? My guest today, you probably know very well. He's usually the host of the show. It's Jim Connolly. We're planning to have another guest today as well, and she may very well show up still. But in the meantime, I'm here with Jim Connolly, and looking forward to discussing the topic of data trust with him. Welcome, Jim. How you doing today?
Hi. I'm fine. How you doing, Jessica? Glad to
doing
be here.
Doing well. Doing well. Thanks for hopping on the call with me today. And before we get to the discussion, just wanted to add a couple of notes for the listeners. You can post questions for Jim or I, and comments for your peers in the audience on the live chat box on the All Analytics Streaming audio page. I'll share as many questions as I can, and then we'll address more during the chat session at the bottom of the hour. And because of the nature of the topic today, I also wanted to say that we plan to focus on the discussion today on the topics of data, trust, and reliability of predictions. And we're going to try to stay away from any partisan political discussions. You can certainly stick around for our discussion today and then take those partisan political discussions to Facebook later on. So, Jim, election night. Tell me about your election night experience. Were you expecting the outcome that we got? What was your day like that day?
I wasn't completely shocked. If I was shocked at all, I shouldn't have been, because I was reading a post from somebody on Facebook this morning, in fact, who is still registering shock over the result. And if you think back 6 months ago, towards the end of the primary season, how many people did you hear, even at conferences, saying, I can't make a decision here. You know, whoever I choose, I don't like. I mean, the unrest was clear that nobody liked either – not nobody, but many, many people didn't like either candidate. Hmm. And nobody really picked up on it other than, you know, making jokes. So why were we surprised that, you know, all the – data and everything went right out the window?
Yeah, right. It was certainly a surprise to a lot of people. I know that there were some polls out there, in some of the more partisan media sites that were looking at like a 98% chance of victory for Hillary Clinton. I think Nate Silver had it like 3-1 in the end. But again, it was very close. I think I see our other guest, who has dialed in. Trisha, are you there?
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I told you yesterday I've got two sick kittens, and we're having quite a bit of drama at our house today. But I apologize for being late, and I'm ready to talk.
No worries. I hope your kittens are okay. And I'm here on the line with Jim Connolly too. And we just were starting to talk about the surprises of the polling and election day. And let me introduce you to our guests as well. Trisha Anderud, who is the author of a new book coming out about data visualization and dashboards, and who is also the director of data visualization practice at Zencast Consulting. And so I want to say welcome, Trisha. Thanks for joining us today, and hope the kittens are feeling better soon.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm sure they'll be fine. I'm sure everything's going to work out okay, or I'm hoping so anyway.
Yeah. So, Trisha, tell me, when we were talking about the topic of this show before, we were talking about kind of like going into Election Day, and Jim and I were just talking about this too, going into Election Day and not really things were kind of up in the air. Everybody thought there was a definitive outcome, or a lot of people did. And I'm just wondering about your experience on that day. Did you think one candidate or the other would win?
I had been following it for several weeks. I was very interested because I'd been watching the polls. I'd been watching Nate Silver. I'd been watching HuffPost and CNN, and I'd even been watching some of the betting that was going on, like Las Vegas style. Mm. And I went to bed early. I was expecting what everyone else was expecting, that Hillary Clinton had won. And I woke up at 3 in the morning, and I checked Google, and it said Trump had won. And honestly, my first thought was like, oh my gosh, how did they get the data so wrong? What is going to happen to data professionals now? And I was just in a state of panic, and Jim will tell you that I like got up immediately and wrote a blog post about it and sent it to him and called him, I think, like at 7 a.m.
Right. There were tons of comments on that blog post as well. I mean, it created quite a lively discussion for sure. So what are your thoughts about the data, the polling data, and what might have gone wrong there? I mean, do you think it was a data quality problem?
You know, I have read a lot since then, because I'm between maybe the journalists were kind of biased in the way they were looking at it. Perhaps the polling was biased, or I wonder, like, maybe they just did they not ask the right people, or they couldn't find the right people to ask. Honestly, I'm like not 100% sure exactly what it was. It seems like there's all of these things going around, because on HuffPost, that one lady, and I didn't get her name, she was saying 98% for Clinton, and I thought, like, well, usually you see like there's like a 3% margin of error. But she had been arguing with Nate Silver on Twitter the week before, when Nate Silver was at least giving Trump a 1 in 3 chance. And she was really giving him a hard time. And then in her, I guess, mea culpa the week after, she was saying, I really got it wrong. I shouldn't have argued with Nate. I've really learned a big lesson. And it made me wonder about – go on.
I was going to say, I think Nate Silver argued right back.
He did, yes.
Yeah.
So I was just curious. I'm like, I wonder if she was just too young for that post. And then I thought, well, why is a journalist doing some of this? Why shouldn't there be someone who's got a little bit more experience doing this, or shouldn't they have a statistician doing it instead of a journalist? Because I'm a journalist by trade, and I know that, you know, statistics are not my strong point. So I was just kind of curious about that.
Yeah, I don't know much about the Huffington Post blogger who did that, and if she was just a journalist or a statistician as well. I really don't. But, I mean, that seems kind of she was certainly proven wrong, for sure.
Let me just throw out another possibility here, and that is that well, 2 points. One is that I wonder how many people didn't finally make up their mind until they walked into that booth. And I bet that could have been a factor, along with the fact that the turnout for the 2016 election was the lowest in 20 years. So I just wonder if perhaps the Democrats just didn't get the vote out.
I think that's a good point, because, like, some of my friends had decided ahead of time, and I know one of my friends said that right before she walked in, she said, well, I'm just going to vote with my party because that's more along what my beliefs are, so I'm just going to vote that way.
That's interesting, and that sort of aligns with what Jim was saying, where, you know, when he'd gone to conferences, he heard a lot of people talking about how they didn't like either one of the two candidates in the general election. Interesting.
I think that's a huge problem, because I think some people were actually voting against a candidate as opposed to voting for a candidate.
And I'd heard a lot of commentators talk since then about how the campaign was so negative and it really didn't focus on the issues. And that certainly didn't lend itself to making either, you know, it may have helped that feeling of not wanting to vote for either one of the candidates.
This is true. But yesterday when you and I were talking, I was saying that if we lift the data up out of the election and just talk about when you look at data, how you can't really be in a silo about it. I think I was giving you an example of when I worked for a customer service organization, that when I would look through customer service data and what people had to say about how the organization was performing, I realized that maybe there was a lot of times I could have been in a bubble, because this was my friends they were talking about, and it was things where I had a hand in making sure people got trained, and I was a manager in the organization. So I think I had my own bias about how good or bad the organization was. And so I'm not always sure how you guard against this inherent bias that you just have.
Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly something that's been discussed since the election as well. I mean, people, cognitive bias, I think it's called, we all hear the information we want to hear, and if something doesn't fit with our worldview, we sort of ignore it. In terms of the election as well, and since then, it's been reported widely that we're all sort of in our own echo chambers of our social media, which is made up of people who we agree with, and we don't necessarily always see the other side. Jim, I mean, have you seen that yourself in your experience out there?
Well, I created my own little echo chamber just before the election, weeks before the election. I was so sick of people posting on Facebook really nasty, rotten stuff, or just incessantly harping on the election. I started unfollowing people, and I've refollowed a few of them, but most of them, they're gone. I don't miss them.
The
one thing I think that it comes out of this whole election thing is, yes, data as a science takes a ding. Okay, people won't be a little more cautious in terms of trusting it, but I think that's a relatively short term thing. I don't think people are going to stop using Yelp to choose a restaurant. you know, politicians, they didn't just take a ding. They took something much more significant than that. And I think the media took a pretty good hit. Longer, you know, the longer term impact when it comes to, you know, the people who listen to these calls, I don't think that they're going to feel a negative impact at all, because people are still sharing their data. People are still looking for data. You know, I think long term, you know, the analytics community is fine.
That's a good point. And Tricia, when you were talking, when you and I were talking about your customer service and customer experience yesterday, one of the things we talked about was how maybe people aren't always giving their genuine answer, especially if they're talking to someone on the phone, but if they can't hear the person's voice, it might be different if they're just filling out a survey. Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, one of the things I found is that if I called people on the phone to do a customer satisfaction survey, they were always more pleased than when I got something back on the web. On the web, I would get some of the nastiest comments about people, and just like, I'm surprised my computer didn't melt down. The things were just so wicked that they would say. And that was when I realized, like, wow, online people don't have like that shield. You know, like when you're in your car, maybe you're yelling at other drivers than when you talk. But one of the things when I was researching that article, they said was there was a lot more support for Trump when they did the online calls than when they did the in-person ones. And some of the people stated that the person's voice or the agent that was doing it may have been more recognizable as being from a certain background or having
like
maybe
they had
some characteristics. Yeah, they had an accent or something like that, and so maybe the other person was sensitive, or I think there was just a lot of negativity around being a Trump supporter, and like even since the election, I think there's just been some the way people are reacting to this election has just been I've never seen anything like this. It's very scary, I think.
Certainly.
A good point, because if you think about it, you know, I mean, everybody got calls, you know, prior to the election of, you know, and you never really knew who was calling, and what their agenda was, and you didn't know how long they were going to take on the call. So every time I got one, I just rejected it outright, or I would get halfway through and say, this is, you know, you said this is going to be a 2-minute call. You know, we're going on 10 minutes already.
Right.
So I hang up. And it's almost like jury duty. You know, if you get the people who really want to be, you know, be interviewed on a poll, you question their motive, just like people who want to be on a jury. you may not want them to be judging you. They may be too eager. So, you know, maybe it's time to reevaluate the whole survey methodologies when it comes to, you know, political questions.
That's really interesting.
That's a good point, yeah.
You know, when I went to that Nate Silver presentation last year, he was talking about how really those telephone polls over landline phones used to be the gold standard. And now they're not anymore because so many people have cut the cord. They don't have landline phones anymore, particularly the millennials who only have the mobile phones. And so it's harder to get a good read on the entire population. And that online polls and web-based polls, you know, they were still working on making those better. And they hadn't fine-tuned it all yet. But it certainly points to, you know, maybe you can get more of an honest answer from people if you're surveying them online instead of by voice, really. going
well,
back
yeah,
to go ahead.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's probably what they're going to find, because even when I was reading, doing some other research, the Democrats also wanted it to be like online polling as well. But I think we were talking yesterday about that hidden Trump voter was a big thing. And one of the things I thought about later was, I wonder, like, I'm kind of beating on the HuffPost as an example because they got it just so wrong. I just wondered if, like, when you're doing some of these things, like even when I was doing my customer service data, that don't you have to consider things outside of your organization? Or, like, did they just look at the data, or did they consider anything else around them? Like, one of the things I know is that Trump had these really big rallies. I mean, just big, big rallies with lots of people there. It seemed like he was generating a lot of excitement. And I don't think Hillary's followers were quite as excited about her. So I was just like, why wouldn't you have taken that into an account, that there's a groundswell going on? And again, I kind of point to the person's age and experience level.
That could certainly be the case. I mean, and I go back to the echo chambers again that Jim was talking about, you know, following and unfollowing people on Facebook and Twitter. I got to say, I did unfollow some people on Facebook over the course of the election. But then when we got down to the line, I'm thinking, you know, am I only hearing what I want to hear? Should I be listening to more things? And so I started not following them, but just looking at them to see other points of view. And that goes to your point, Tricia, of bringing in other data. And I know that you were talking about, you know, in your consulting work with customers, you know, there may be concern going forward about can we trust this data? How do we bring more trust to the data in this post 2016 election time? And I think your point about looking at different sources of data is a good one. Can you tell me sort of more about how your customers look at data?
Some of them are only, you know, they're still looking at their own data, but I know that there's other customers that, and this is going to seem a little bit off topic, but like they'll pull in weather data if they're looking at sales information, because they'll want to know how weather affects that. But I'm meaning that to be an example of how they just go looking for outside sources and think about different things that could affect and could make a difference to the data they're looking at. So that's some of the things that they're doing. But I wanted to bring up a different point. This whole election, I've never seen so much focus on an election. Like the media, it must have been really big business for them, because it seemed like a big reality TV show. And it seemed like there was a lot more analytics this time. There was a lot more graphs. There was a lot more, just a lot more than what I've seen in the past. Maybe I didn't have the interest that I've had in this election. But did you guys notice that as well?
I was fascinated by... I'm sorry, go ahead, Jessica.
I was just going to agree with you and say, you know, everybody was trying to predict exactly what was going to happen. And there were more numbers and, you know, graphical depictions of what was going to happen, what people were predicting was going to happen, I think, than ever before. And I think the web was a really interesting medium for that, because it filtered in some of the real-time changes to the data that you couldn't see before. Back in the days when we were all younger and newspapers were delivered on our doorsteps in the morning. What were you going to say, Jim?
I was fascinated by one of the commentators on CNN. What impressed me was the data he had at his fingertips, and I mean literally fingertips. He had a giant touch screen. And if they were talking about what was going on in a particular state, he could touch on any county in any city and call up the results for the past like two or three elections to see which way that county has gone in the past. And it was everything was instantaneous. And I don't know how this guy got through the night, because he was on when I turned it on at like 8 o'clock. He was on, and I saw it again periodically throughout the night. And I woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and the guy was still standing there. I don't know when he even took a break. he probably didn't walk for a week, but just the technology that they had at his fingertips with a simple, probably basic touchscreen, and what was stashed behind that screen was amazing.
Yeah, I'm wondering if because Trump was such a disruptor, I mean, we talk about disruptors for other, like, you know, Uber's a disruptor, that like they were trying to do this election like it was Clinton and Bush running, because I think that was the expectation from everyone. And it just was not a Clinton-Bush. Even, I don't know if you guys looked at Politico a couple of weeks, or it was last week, they were saying that Hillary's team went so closely with their data and wouldn't consider anything else that that's what lost the election, that they just worked their plan too hard, and it was the wrong plan.
That's interesting because, you know, everybody said Trump was not really the conventional candidate. And so any previous data from previous elections, probably difficult to apply to this particular race in terms of predictions. But
yeah,
just thinking
about
what Jim just said, too, you think about all the data they had at their fingertips, more than ever before, and still the failure to predict the outcome for most people is kind of amazing.
Well, it also kind of goes back to, if you think about the way statistics work, like I can throw the dice each time, and they're not related to each other. The dice being thrown the time before is not related to the current time. That they're, you know, we all want it to be like, oh, well, we've already had 3 2s in a row. It's got to be a 6 now, right? It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah,
and I think
yeah.
that's the certainty that we want in our data or in our real world situation that is not there.
Tricia, I think you've been to too many SAS conferences in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Well, I can't argue with you.
I think we're getting kind of close to the end of the audio portion of our show here. But before we wrap it up, I think we can all agree that 2016 was pretty unpredictable. And I wanted to ask our guests here, Jim and Tricia, do you think 2017 is going to be more predictable, or are we in for another wild ride? Jim, what do you think first?
Well, I'll follow up on Trisha's disruptor point, which is actually very valid, and is no reason to think that 2017 will be more stable, because there's disruption going on in all types of industries, including our own, and throughout the tech industry, and also just look at how technology and analytics are being used in so many different ways in different industries. Now, I think we're in for another 2 or 3 years of crazy business development.
I think
you're
right.
I think
he's right. I think the AI stuff, I mean, even like in the last year, I've got an Alexa that sits on my desk. My mother has an Alexa. She loves Alexa. She talks to it all day long. And I'm like, that's just like a minor thing that's happening. Just seems like there's just a lot of uncertainty in the world, and it's slightly scary, it's slightly exciting to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. But may we live in interesting times, I guess, right?
that's the ancient Chinese curse, right?
Yeah, well, I want to thank both of you, Tricia and Jim, for joining me on the show today. And want to remind our guests that we're going to be, as we wrap up the audio portion of our discussion here, we'll be moving on to the live chat on All Analytics, where Tricia and Jim and I will spend a few minutes addressing the questions and comments. So thanks to you both for being with us and sharing your thoughts today, and to SAS for sponsoring this event. This has been Jessica Davis for All Analytics Radio and UBM Tech. Thanks for tuning in and have a great day.
Yes. Bye.
Thank you, Jessica.